5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
What's the situation, Captain?
This is Situation Fluxus, a weekly one-hour program focused on jazz and improvised music, news, radio, conversations, and more. Thank you for tuning in to Situation Fluxus on WGXC 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears in upstate New York. I'm your host, Cheryl Kay. Let us dig into the headlines. The Festival de Musique Actuelle de Victoriaville is go, May 18th through the 22nd in Victoriaville, Quebec, Canada. Featured artists include guitarist Mary Halverson, saxophonists Mats Gustafsson and Colin Stetson. Also the presentation of Tom Sergel's 2018 Fire Music, about the birth of free jazz in America. For more information, fimav.qc.ca. Three-time Grammy Award-winning and MacArthur Fellow vocalist Cecile McLaurin-Savant is at Jazz at Lincoln Center tonight and tomorrow night, May 12th and 13th. And vocalist Catherine Russell continues her virtual performance at Jazz at Lincoln Center through May 15th. For more information, 2020.jazz.org. At the Stone tonight, The Modulators with guitarist John Lee. Tomorrow night, May 13th, Archipelago X. And on Saturday, May 14th, Solo Piano by Brian Marcella. For more information, thestonenyc.com. This Friday and Saturday night, May 13th and 14th, at the Jazz Forum in Tarrytown, New York, vocalist Karen Allison and her quartet for two sets. And on Sunday, May 15th for two sets, pianist Alan Broadbent, bassist Harvey S., and drummer Billy Mintz. Also, trumpeter Mark Morganelli and the Jazz Forum All-Stars celebrate Brazil on Wednesday, May 18th. For more information, jazzforumarts.org. Jazz at the Vogel, Count Basie Center for the Arts in Red Bank, New Jersey, presents bassist Marcus Miller on Saturday, May 14th. For more information, thebasie.org. At the Falcon in Marlborough, New York, continuing its Sunday Jazz series, vocalist Samara Joy with the Pasquale Grasso Trio this Sunday, May 15th. For more information, liveatthefalcon.com. Also this Sunday, performing at the Lace Mill East Gallery in Kingston, New York, the Tani Tabal Quartet. For more information, bizio@earthlink.net. Swinging in the Cellar at Entwine in the West Village of New York City continues with vocalist Terry Rozier, guitarist Steve Berger, and bassist John Menagan. For more information, entwinenyc.com. Vibraphonist Joel Ross performs at the Jazz Gallery in New York City this Friday and Saturday, May 13th and 14th. His new Blue Note release is The Parable of the Poet. For more information, iPlayVibes.com. At iBeam in Brooklyn, New York, Wide Open Works presents The Michael Gentile Flow on Tuesday, May 17th. For more information, iBeamBrooklyn.com. And drummer Nate Smith begins his European tour in Budapest, Hungary on May 18th. His latest release is Kinship 2. For more information, NateSmithMusic.com. And now for new releases. Coming out tomorrow, Friday, May 13th, vocalist Ori Dagan's self-release, Click Right Here, and pianist Ron Chaw's self-release, Mati. Other new releases: keyboardist John Balk's Halfa on ECM, Secret People's self-titled release on Out of Your Head, and bassist Orr Barraquette's Sahar on Enja. All news items have been gathered from various media sources. For the latest updates, contact the source, venue, or business. Remember, I'm just the messenger. My guest is Juno Awards nominee, vocalist and songwriter Alex Bird of Alex Bird and the Jazz Mavericks. They've been nominated for their release, You Are the Light and the Way.
I haven't earned these lines upon my brow. I've simply frowned them in up till now. My face might deceive you, but my heart will show. Living the life of an old soul, I haven't walked as far away. I've taken shortcuts through every day. My shoes might deceive you, but my heart will say, living the life of the old and great. So I'll go on dreaming of the very.
So I want to thank you for joining me on Situation Fluxus.
Thank you very much, Cheryl. It's so nice to be here.
Sure. The title tune of your second album, the Juno nominated You Are the Light and the Way. The lyrics read like the submission of a completely weakened soul to a comforting presence. Was there a certain someone in mind when you wrote this?
Yes. Most of my music is inspired by my darling Lola, and we just hit 5.5 years together. And I felt like that weary soul walking through the desert, trying to find my way and knowing I'd reach there one day, but I was broken down by just the process of life. And things started happening for me musically and romantically when I met Lola, and it just sort of took off from there. I mean, the past, I'd say 5 years in particular, everything's been happening for me. And that song is a direct love letter for her, because she's that shining beacon for me in the middle of the night. And I'm inspired by her greatly. She's one of the most strongest, most independent, beautiful ladies I know. So that track, You Were the Light in the Way, is for her. A lot of the other album, basically anything I do is for her, because she's my inspiration. I love her so much.
Wow. You are going to tell her to tune into this, right? So she can
hear all that. Oh, I will. Yeah. She knows. I'm checking off all the Lola marks right now. This is great.
The 12 original tunes are played at a relaxed mid-tempo. Another 12 songs added to the Jazz Mavericks playbook. How many original works does your book contain at this moment?
At this moment? Our first album, Whiskey Kisses, had 10 tracks, originals. You Are the Light and the Way had 12. And then since that point, we've written about 15 other originals, which we're shopping for another album, and cool. We're testing them out at gigs. And yeah, we're just constantly writing and trying to find new ways of never giving people the same thing, but trying to have a progression, right?
Yeah. Are your audiences making suggestions on what you should write next?
They're not making suggestions, but one of the things that I'm really, really happy about, during our gigs, we do like the Choice Great American Songbook Standards. And instead of most of our gigs are made up of the original tunes. And then I have standards along the way, like I stay away from Fly Me to the Moon and all that kind of stuff, because I think it's been done so many times. But I pick a tune like Polka Dots and Moonbeams or My One and Only Love. And I tell people, this is why this song is important. This is why we're going to do it for you now. And they stand out a little more. But the thing we're hearing most at our gigs, which I'm so happy about, is people are coming up to talk about the original tunes, and they want to know the inspirations behind them, or they want to talk about, you know, because I think sometimes you have this idea about, and we're going to do an original tune right now, and people are like, oh gosh, I don't want to hear that. But they're connecting with people. So I'm so thrilled, because that's the goal, right? We want to have something that's ours, and again, try to take it somewhere else. People aren't having suggestions for original tunes, but they're connecting with them. And that makes me really happy.
Yeah, beautiful. In your mind, what subjects and songs are yet to be written?
Oh, gosh. I think everything has been written in a sense, but it hasn't been written from my point of view, if that makes sense. Like, everybody has their unique story. I'm a storyteller. I mean, I love telling stories through music. I'm also an actor on the side. So storytelling has been a part of my life for a very, very long time. Just to give you a little bit of a background, everything started for me. I was adopted from Romania when I was 6 weeks old, and I came to Canada. And I fell into a bit of a musical family, and I was taken to jazz clubs starting at the age of 2 in downtown Toronto. So I grew up going to these smoky jazz bars. I got to see Ray Charles and Mel Torme and Joe Williams and Diana Krall. And I guess through a process of jazz osmosis, I learned how to do what I do. But again, it's like all the stories I think have been told through music, except for mine personally. So I just have to really honestly connect with how I feel about things and try to put that into my music. So yeah, we hit on many different things. I love the dark and groovy too. I love dark and groovy storytelling. I like bringing people along and kind of painting the picture for them. Like Light in the Way has definitely some of those feels. So yeah, I don't know if there's something new to say, quote unquote, but I'm definitely going to try to do so nevertheless.
You are the sun and the moon. You are the night and the day. You see right through me. You barely know me. You are the light and the way. Traveling forever, I'm getting weary and gray. I need the water that you've got to offer. Please let me rest here and stay. Lay your hands upon me and let me breathe your fire. Keep me warm, fan the flames of my desire. It's okay as I rest here for today. Wrap your arms right around me, 'cause you are the light and the way. Yeah, you are the light and the way. Believe what they'd say, so I kept on walking instead of talking. Come, oh come with me. Well, when those stars shine above you, baby, that's when you know what to say.
The 51st Juno Awards will be held in Toronto this year on Saturday, May 14th, available through television, radio streaming services, and social media platforms. You and the Jazz Mavericks have been nominated in the category of Vocal Jazz Album. Have you ever been a nominee before?
No, this is a first-time nomination. It's crazy. I mean, all the other nominees, they're fantastic category, but they were all on kind of like the best of list last year, and we didn't make any of those lists. So it means somebody listened when we submitted the album, which is really encouraging. So I guess we're the underdogs. But to be nominated for a Juno, I mean, it's the highest award you can get for music in Canada. It's basically like your Grammys. To be nominated also for All Original Music, I mean, that's special for us. So we're still tripping over it. I can't believe it's coming up this weekend and I'm not even ready for it. I'm just going to, to walk the red carpet and do all that stuff. It's going to be a really sweet experience.
Beyond the, oh my gosh, it's a wonderful feeling. What would winning mean to you and the Jazz Mavericks?
My whole thing is that I just want to share our music with the maximum amount of people and grow our audiences. So the nomination in itself is already garnered. For the first time, I've been getting offers for gigs. I've never had that before until the nomination. So it feels like I don't have a management team. I'm doing this all on my own. I'm sending emails, I'm knocking on doors, I'm annoying people over and over again. And so to be in that position is great because the nominations help. If we win, it just kind of solidifies things even more. Again, in a sense, we've already won because the nomination has allowed us to enter another category now. We've been recognized at the sort of top level of our game. So I just want to reach the most people possible. So a win would definitely escalate that even more. But regardless of win or lose, we're going to keep telling our story and trying to get that music out there. And again, take this music. People have a very specific idea of what a jazz crooner might be. It's probably Michael Bublé. It's probably a big band. It's probably Fly Me to the Moon and all that kind of stuff. And I'm working immensely against that because when I think about the artists that I love and what they were doing at the time, yes, they performed the classic standards. I mean, it was the popular music back then, but they were always trying to do something new and they were always trying to find new songwriters. So that's kind of what I'm taking to heart and trying to do myself. So we'll see. But the Juno nomination in itself has been immensely helpful to moving that goal forward.
Are you wearing a tux that night?
I'm not wearing a tux. I was going to, but I got this this powder blue three-piece suit and a fedora to match. So we're just going all out. Lola got this beautiful pink dress. It's and I have a pink pocket square to match. She looks like a princess essentially. And we're just gonna go there and see what happens. It's gonna be a crazy experience. Like it's.
Don't forget to take pictures.
No, lots of pictures. Yeah, the good thing about that event is they take pictures for you. So you know that's also good.
Cool. So one of the events before the award ceremony is coming up this week, the Juno Songwriter Circle. Mm-hmm. Quote, Canada's top songwriters and 2022 Juno nominees come together for a night of intimate conversations and stripped down performances. Alex, are you attending?
I am not attending, unfortunately.
What?
I know. Well, I mean, we're new at it. So, you know, maybe next year we'll be included in the songwriters circle. But again, it's like, I think for that, the songwriter circle too, they don't have any jazz categories in there. It's mostly like the singer, songwriter, folk, like some of the more popular-ish type people. Again, we have, like yourself, we have so many different varied types of music and beautiful artists in our country. So I'm not included in that. But again, we're headed somewhere, I feel. And I'm, again, glad it's because of our songwriting. Like it's, we'll see.
This needs to be rectified right away.
Thank you.
Well, Alex, as we come to the end of this interview, I'm going to give you the last word. Something that I didn't ask you that you'd like to tell us about, an upcoming gig or project?
My mind is too full of ideas right now.
Come on, brother, share.
Yeah, I think I just want to really in addition to my Jazz Mavericks, who I love, I really want to focus on Ewan Farnko, my songwriting partner. He's one of the most fantastic, beautiful piano players in our country right now. And he's so in demand, and he's raised my game so much. I've realized that if you want to make your best work, you surround yourself with the best. That's literally it. So I came at this from a point of view where when I first met my band about 3-4 years ago, they had been performing for many years. This was their whole life. And I had never performed with a band before. I was just kind of, you know, sneakily trying to get confident. So Ewan, writing this album with Ewan over the past couple of years, we've grown really, really close. We sort of complement each other perfectly because when I write songs, I can read a little bit of music, but I can't really generally read music. I create the melody and the lyrics in my head at the same time, and I get them out there, and then I take them to Ewan, and then he shapes it up and we figure it out. And so that's how we started writing together, but now it's developed to the point where we can sit down together. I don't have a pre-ordained plan in my head. We just start jamming, and we've been able to write songs that way. So we're growing together, we're developing our sound together, and I think he's as much the reason I'm doing this as my darling Lola, for instance. I have my love partnership and my musical partnership, and they kind of go hand in hand. I'm so lucky to have the people that I have in my life. So yeah, tailing this out, I just want people to know that Ewan Farncombe is a beautiful musician, and this is as much his as it is mine.
For more information, alexbird.net and junoawards.ca.
I was a young boy, raised in the city, surrounded by people and things, dreaming of a place that I would run to, where the blackbird sings. At first I heard the music, and then I saw their dancing over my ceiling. It writhed, the place waiting deep in my eyes, where the blackbird sings.
And now for some music.
Thank you.
guitarist Oscar Pena debuts his suite Almadraba on his fifth album named after it. Arranged and composed for an 8-piece ensemble with bassist Ron Carter on this selection, we heard Calamento. Marta Sanchez on keyboard, Richie Barchet on percussion, and the Harlem Quartet. You're listening to Situation Fluxus on WGXC 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm your host, Cheryl Kay. Please send your comments, quips, and anecdotes, as well as feedback to thejazzdisturbance@gmail.com, info@wgxc.org, feedback@wgxc.org, or leave a 3-minute message at area code 518-291-WGXC. Our website is wgxc.org.
Hi, I'm Sharp Radway, pianist, composer, arranger, and author. And you're listening to Situation Fluxus on WGXC 90.7 FM, radio for open ears with your host, Cheryl Kay.
My interview is with Juno Award nominee, saxophonist, composer, and author John Gordon. His artist share release is titled Stranger Than Fiction. So I want to thank you for joining me here on Situation Fluxus.
Thanks for having me.
Stranger Than Fiction is the second time you've worked with artist share. Is that correct?
No, I've actually been with them since, got involved with them latter part of 05, early part of 06. And I did 3 CDs and 2 live concert downloads. Okay. And then there are 2 more recent CDs, which is Answer and this new one, Stranger Than Fiction. But there was one in 09 called Evolution, and in 07 called Within Worlds, I guess end of 07, start of 08, and in 06 called The Things You Are. So I got involved with artist share. I was working with Maria Schneider a good bit at the time, and she had, you know, as we were talking before we started the interview, I said, you know, leading up to, well, you know, you want to get a record and be on a label and be in Tower Records. And then when Tower Records, I think it was 03 was the year that Tower Records ended. And I might've been the same year that Maria won the Grammy for the best jazz record, large ensemble jazz recording, and was the first artist in any genre to win a Grammy for a CD that was not released in stores. And it was only released through a crowdfunding site like Artistshare, which was kind of the first really big one. And so that's, you know, that really inspired me. And I reached out to her and she put me in touch with Brian Camilio, who runs Artistshare.
With your other releases, you've gone with what was once the traditional route of working with a record label. Why back now to a fan-funded project?
Well, pretty much I've done exclusively fan-funded over the last, let's say, 15 years, from 06 to 2021. And so the previous projects that I did, I did 3 on Crisscross. And, you know, on some of those labels, you're a little bit limited time-wise. You know, it's like, hey, you got 5-6 hours and we need an hour's worth of music. And it can be a little hit or miss. So from there, I did something with Double Time. I was reached out, was approached by a guy named Jamie Abersold Jr. A lot of people probably know Jamie Abersold Sr., who, you know, Abersold been in all the books and, you know, the jazz educational books and various products that he did, the Music Minus One, which was something that he really was very prominent in. Very nice guy, by the way. Got to meet him a few years ago. And his son reached out to me and said, hey, I've got this label. Would you like to do something? So we did, I think we did 4 projects with Jamie. And prior to that, actually, when I was younger, I did a couple things on a label called Chiaroscuro that was run by Hank O'Neill. There's a lot of great projects on that label. Lee Konitz, I know, was doing a lot of things there. So, but for me, going to a fan-funded thing, there was a lot of things where it's like, well, you didn't put the cover I wanted you to put. You didn't use the liner notes I wanted you to use or not use any liner notes. And you selected takes in certain cases that I didn't want you to, you know, there was miscommunication about the name of a song or, and I was just like, so whatever I'm not happy with, I've got nobody to blame but me. It's like, so I just think that that's ultimately what you want to kind of do is like, just try to hone your craft and your vision as much as you can, make the project and the finished result, what you want it to be as much as you can, given the circumstances. And I feel like with doing it myself through ArtistShare has allowed me to do that a little bit better than I was able to do when I had, you know, limited amounts of time, to do that.
So who's more temperamental on the bandstand, those who teach or those who do not teach?
Oh, that's a good question. You know, I know some people that are great players and they don't teach because they're just like, oh man, I can't. hearing stories about, like, you know, really great athletes that didn't necessarily make great, like, bench coaches and managers because, like, come on, you know, to do that thing, right? And so I don't know. I think to me, I had great teachers often that were very tough. But and then I know my rep is that I'm kind of tough, which I think, like, that's hysterical, because I think if they had Jonathan Strasser and Eddie Locke and Phil Woods and some of the people that mentored me, you know, they'd be like, oh, I see. OK, yeah. So that you're a teddy bear. I mean, I think, so for me, I think you want to be supportive, but you want to be honest, because you don't want to go the other route. Because I see a lot of teachers that are just like, yeah, okay, sounds good. What do you want to do? So you always put it back on the student. So, you know what I mean? So they're going to give you a nice evaluation at the end of the year. You collect a check. The music is more meaningful than that. You know, teaching is more meaningful to me. It's like, I think it's a, you know, just like being a musician, this part of it, you're trying to pass on something that is very impactful and very meaningful. And so you want to be supportive but honest at the same time. So certain musicians I know that don't teach are like, man, you know, some of these kids come in my room and they're arrogant or disrespectful, and I just do not have any patience for that. So I think there are some great players that are just like, I tried, I can't do it, or whatever. I remember I took a couple lessons with a great classical composer, English composer named Richard Rodney Bennett. He was knighted by the Queen. He'd studied with amazing people. I mean, he, like, an incredible, incredible contemporary composer. And he was kind enough to give me a couple lessons, but he said, I can't do it. I have no patience for, you know, the students, what they don't know and their level. And so I would say that there's probably no hard and fast rule, but I think there's plenty of high level musicians that are just like, I can't do it, because they're so in their own prism and vision of like, come on, man, you got to have these basic things together before we even get to anything creative.
Well, the reason I ask is because your release features faculty members and former students from the University of Manitoba, where you teach. So I didn't know if you selected them for any particular reason, that they seem to be a little bit more disciplined, or, you know, or they kind of know where you're coming from. And as you said before, with labels and recording, you know, time is of the essence. When you're on the bandstand, it's to get down to business. So. Yeah.
Well, that's true. And we recorded in an unusual way because of COVID. We were in five separate rooms, and I had recorded that way on Will Bonis's record, like, I don't know, like maybe a year earlier. So I was like, oh, I could maybe do this project this way and still make it work. And, you know, under the COVID protocols that we were all dealing with. And then everybody else, other than the rhythm section of myself, guitar, piano, bass, and drums, and myself, in five separate rooms. We, you know, Derek Gardner, even though he was in Winnipeg, he recorded remotely at his home. He said, I'm set up to do that with a mic. John Ellis and Alan Ferber were able to do that in New York. And I guess Alan was in St. Louis by then. Orrin Evans did what he did in Philadelphia. Tristan Martinson and Anna Blackmore, I think they were either in Winnipeg or in Vancouver. Reginald Lewis was in Illinois. Who am I forgetting? Larry Roy played, again, another person in Winnipeg, but he played remotely at his own home studio. And so like what we did in the room together, there was that, I don't think I would want to make a record that was just like everybody recorded remotely, which I think some people did do some experimentation with that, with click tracks and all the rest of it. But I thought if we start with an organic band and we just add the other horns and a couple of solos, you know, we'll be able to balance that out. And so I think we were able to do that. And certainly the faculty and former students were all very, you know, disciplined, know how to get down to business, know how to take care of business, and were great. But it's just nice when you can, you know, work with friends and former students and, you know, see what they've gone on to do. I mean, Jocelyn studied with me for a couple of years during her postdoc before she went on and did her master's. And then last year she won the Juno for best jazz record in Canada, which is kind of amazing. So it's just great to support that kind of hard work and effort. And all of the, you know, the former students that were on the project really showed a lot of that. So.
So, John, you are also an author.
Mm-hmm.
Your 2020 Jazz Dialogues is full of encounters and interviews with other musicians. And 2013's For Sue is your memoir. Were you ever at the crossroads of either becoming a writer or a musician, or did your talents for both flow into one career path?
Well, I never thought I was going to write, but I will tell you that my high school homeroom teacher for all 4 years and 1 year of my English teacher, Bernard Rauscher, was a wonderful English teacher that I had at Performing Arts High School. And he said to me when I graduated, he said, if you weren't so serious about music, I would possibly suggest a career in writing. So I didn't know he thought that much of my writing. I've had three books out. One is just, it's called Foundations for Improvisers. And it's about, you know, it's like kind of an inside thing just for jazz students. And I didn't necessarily think it was something I would publish, but Charles Cullen at Cullen Music asked me to publish it 2013. So we did. For Sue was, it was a kind of a cathartic experience to go back and write about, some challenges I had growing up, but between all my friends, families, and the musicians that I met that kind of all mentored and adopted me, I frankly am an extremely lucky person. So that's kind of what that's about. And in terms of Jazz Dialogues, I mean, I feel like I've written things that you don't have to necessarily be a particularly gifted or well-versed writer. You know, I think I have some ability to write, but you know, I think about somebody that could really write a novel or write, you know, certain kinds of, you know, more in-depth kinds of things. Like, I think everybody has a story. A lot of musicians particularly do. And so I think the memoir was that. And the other two books are really, you know, one is particularly for improvisational students, and the other one is just for anybody that's interested in jazz. And like, I just love, and the way that book came about, it really wasn't intended to be a book. And none of this, I didn't think was any of this was really going to become books in the end. But the way that the last one became a book is that when I started with Artishare, they said, well, other than the recordings, what other creative content you want to create? Because they were always saying, like, we're not just going to put the CDs out. We want you to create some educational stuff. And what other content are you looking at? And I thought about it for a minute. It came to me right away. Like, I would just love to sit and talk to my friends, my peers, my heroes, my mentors. And, you know, so I guess in 05 and 06, I think the first one I did was with Eddie Locke, who was one of my musical fathers, and who I mentioned when we were talking earlier, I was watching a place in his building, thanks to him, watching his neighbor's cat for a couple of years for no rent. I was right around the corner from what is now Smoke and used to be Augie's, 929 West End between 105 and 106. And so I interviewed Eddie. And now, who were Eddie's three main influences? Papa Joe Jones, who he and Oliver Jackson lived with, Coleman Hawkins, and Roy Eldridge. And so, I mean, and then coming up in Detroit when he did with Barry Harris and Roland Hanna and Tommy Flanagan and Elvin Jones and Hank Jones, I mean, Thad, I mean, just the stories, Pepper Adams, this, you know, like being that part of the culture, right? And then I interviewed Maria Schneider, and I interviewed Mark Turner, and I interviewed Bill Charlap, and, you know, on and on, Charles McPherson, many people over here. So it just started out as audio content that was up on Artishare. And Brian said to me at one point, he said, you know, you could turn this all into a book sometime. And I was like, maybe I would. So, but I was thinking more, the first thing that came to me is like, I wonder if this might be a doctoral thesis. And I approached, there was a couple of schools who were like, we would accept you as a doctoral student, but we don't like that as a thesis. And they wanted me to do something real specific, like talk about Reeds in 1973, or like, you know, or jazz criticism in 1967. And I was just like, I can't, I you know, if I'm going to dedicate years of my life and write a book, I want it to be, it needs to be something that's close to my heart. And I understand strictly from a research standpoint, from an academic research process thing, which is not my thing. You know what I mean? I want to know from Jay McShann what it was like, you know, finding Charlie Parker and you know, so that's the first thing. He didn't talk that much about Bird, but the opening of the book is me sitting and talking with Jay McShann at an airport when I was 20 years old after getting to play with him. And just some of those experiences like that, you know, things that they passed on to me. And the thing that Jay said is, hey, you sound good, little Bird. You know, he said, you know, because he talked about Bird, he said, you're studying Charlie Parker. That's what you're supposed to do. That's good. But now who are you? What's your contribution? Now you got to find out what you have to offer. And what's very interesting is that's the same thing that Eddie Locke said to me, that Papa Joe Jones said to him. He said, you're not me. You're not Buddy Rich. You're not Roy Haynes. You got to find out who you are and what your contribution is. And so that's kind of almost the thesis of the book. You know, how do you find your contribution and make it? And it can be a lot of things. You know, there's no one thing for, you know, for the, everybody has different things to offer in different ways. But I think that was what most intrigued me, is how did these different people make their contributions? And I think that could maybe be instructive to anybody that appreciates the music, but particularly for musicians, to see, oh, there's a lot of different ways, different paths you can go to make your own contributions. So
author, performer, and educator.
We try. I am blessed. I will say this, next year will be my 30th year teaching jazz at a college level. So yeah, and I'm thankful for that, because as a musician, you know, ideally we want to be playing great gigs all the time with the greatest musicians in the world, but sometimes you play great gigs with great musicians and it's $50 and no healthcare and no pension. So it's like, glad that you do something that you can actually, you know, pay the rent with, you know, that's part of what it is being a musician anyway, is like, you're dealing with composition and arranging, you're passing on what you've been taught by the people that mentored you, and just trying to grow and learn and hone your craft. So I think all those things are connected for sure.
Yeah. The 51st Juno Awards will be held in Toronto this year. You've been nominated in the category of Jazz Album of the Year Solo. Is this your first Juno nomination?
Yes, as a leader, I don't know. I may have been on other projects that, as a sideman, that were nominated. I'm not sure, probably not. But this is definitely my first nomination as leader, yes.
Yeah. You're a past winner of the Thelonious Monk International Jazz Competition, and you've appeared in multiple Downbeat Magazine critics polls. Beyond the, oh my gosh, it's such a wonderful feeling, what would winning this Juno Award mean to you?
Oh, well, I haven't thought that much about it, because I know it sounds a little corny, but when I got the call, I was really honored just to be nominated. And I think anytime you're in those kind of conversations, it's just, you're grateful. What's really cool is two really good friends of mine are also nominated, Jesse Ryan, who is
the saxophonist.
Yes, a good friend, former student, been in Toronto for several years, originally from Trinidad. It's funny, he reached out to me in 2011. He was in Trinidad and I was in Japan. It was the first time I ever did a Skype lesson with anybody. I was like, wow, you know, like that. We were talking about tech before we started doing this. And that was the first time I had done like a long distance Skype thing. And then we stayed in touch over the years. We did he did a few lessons with me on and off. And then we ran into each other in Toronto in 2019. A great alto player from Cuba named Luis Dennis had brought me in to do some two alto gigs with him. And Jesse was all also there, and we met up, and he helped me with some publicity and social media stuff. And I started to see where his music is going. So I'm super happy for Jesse, because he's a great person, great musician, great saxophone player, and has a wonderful vision as a composer and as an artist. And actually, you asked me, am I nominated? I'm actually on Will's record, Will Bonis's record. I'm on that. So, and our friend Fabio Rognelli is on my record and Will's record. So it's kind of like a, you know, old home week, you know, it's like a family affair. Super proud of Will, you know, and his growth as an artist and as an educator. You know, I think he started teaching at the university when he was 26 years old, which is how old I was when I started subbing at all these different schools that I was teaching at in New York. But, you know, just watching his growth and development as a player, as a composer, and kind of, as you know, in terms of his vision as an artist, and to see that rewarded is wonderful. So I'm super happy for both those guys. And the reality of it is, I said this a couple of times. I was on a panel one time with some musicians at the Jazz Museum in Harlem, and they were talking about like people that get VJ Iyer was on the panel, and Steve Coleman and Louis Nash, and talking about people that get grants, you know, and is that a good thing? And this is very inside, but Richard Pryor had this line about Leon Spinks, and he said, be happy for anybody doing anything. You know, Leon, you know, is a boxer. He's, you know, he's not a nuclear physicist, but he's great at being a boxer. And that's what he does. Be happy for, you know, he beat Muhammad Ali. Like, could you do anything more impressive than that? Like, everybody. So whether you win a competition, you win an award, you get a grant, anything that moves the music forward, you know, anything, whatever opportunities there are. I think that's kind of what we all on that panel, whenever that was 10, 12 years ago, that where we all kind of came to land with, like, you know, the scene is so different from what it was when I was a teenager and first going to clubs and thinking of what the music was at that time. I would have never known that, you know, it's so much social media and online stuff. You know, it's not like being on a label and seeing your name in a little thing in Tower Records, like, ah, I made it, you know. Well, I was making it in 1997. And now it's like about some other stuff. So, yeah, I just think like we were talking about Jocelyn Gould before, who's on my record and who won the Juno last year. I'm so happy for her and proud of her hard work and success. And yeah, I mean, I'm going to be happy for whoever it is, really.
For more information, johngordonmusic.com and junoawards.ca. Thank you for tuning in to Situation Fluxus on WGXC 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears. I've been your host, Cheryl Kay. Tune in next Thursday at 10 a.m. for another show. I also host The Jazz Disturbance on the 1st, 2nd, 3rd, and 5th Sunday of each month from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. To contact us about Situation Fluxus, thejazzdisturbance@gmail.com or info@wgxc.org. We appreciate your feedback. Feedback@wgxc.org or leave a 3-minute message at area code 518-291-WGXC. Thank you. Thank you.
preceding show was recorded at Wave Farms WGXC in the Hudson Valley in New York State.